Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Thank you to all who have come to assist me in honoring Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas up to Vyasadeva in this holy land of Dwaraka, Krishna's land. As we know, Krishna was born in where? Vrindavan, Mathura. There are different opinions about this. Generally it said Mathura, but some people have some secret information. Actually it was in Vrindavan. Then he came to, anyway, according to the official story, he was born in Mathura, then was brought to Vrindavan. Can't always trust the official story, that's right. It's doctored history. And then he came to Mathura and then to Dwaraka. How did he come to Dwaraka? Just in the night. In Mathura, everyone was asleep and Krishna was feeling there's too much disturbance from Jarasandha, so he just transferred everyone. They went to sleep in Mathura and woke up in Dwaraka. And from that time, Krishna's been known as Dwarakadhish. Of course, that Dwaraka was a fort within the sea. As Rukmini Devi, the principal queen of Krishna, in Dwaraka said, Krishna said, to Rukmini, that you see, I'm so useless, I'm so afraid of all the kings that I came and built a fort in the sea so no one could get me. I ran away from all the kings. So of course Krishna's not afraid of anyone, but he had his own kingdom and fort built within the sea. And this Dwaraka, this present town, is at the, more or less, the present site of facing the ancient Dwaraka of Krishna. That is described in Shastra, in Srimad Bhagavatam, that when Krishna left this world, then the fort, or Krishna's Dwaraka, fell into the sea. There was no more need of that or use of that, so by the arrangement of Krishna's Lila Shakti. So by the arrangements of Krishna's Yogamaya potency, then the original Dwaraka fell in the sea. Of course, when we say original Dwaraka, what is the original Dwaraka anyway? The Dwaraka is the eternal Lila Bhumi, Lila Stali, or place of pastimes of Krishna, so that eternally exists. Krishna is eternal. His pastimes are eternal. His place of pastimes, that is also eternal. So Dwaraka eternally exists beyond the time and space of this world. In the spiritual world, Dwaraka eternally exists. And that is sometimes manifested in this world. So Krishna manifested that during his pastimes. He spent, in terms of terrestrial years, Krishna spent more time there than in Mathura and Vrindavan together. So he spent more time. Actually, Srila Prabhupada, in a letter to one Gujarati devotee, Srila Prabhupada wrote that actually Krishna, he's also Gujarati, because he was living in Dwaraka. He's an adopted Gujarati. Actually, this site is Saurashtra, Kathiawar. So, that fort of Krishna's fell in the sea, or by Krishna's arrangement, that fell in the sea. And this present town of Dwaraka, that was, well, Shankaracharya, Adi Shankaracharya, he established the deity of Dwarakadhishya. And the worship's been going on ever since. No, he didn't establish. It's said that Bilva Mangal established in the Vishnu Swami Sampradaya. But Shankaracharya established his Pitya, one of his four places for propagating his Mayavada Masat Chastram Prachandam Buddha Muchate, his Asat Shastra, or misinterpretation of Shastra, which is covered Buddhism. So here in Dwaraka and Badrinath, Puri, and in the south at the place of Rishyashringa, Sringeri, he established his mutts. So it's a Puranic place. That means it's very old, and it's also mentioned in the... It's an ancient place of worship. It's one of the four dhams. The four dhams, they're the three just mentioned, Puri, Badri, and Dwarka, plus Rameshwaram, in the four directions of India. So the some archaeological oceanographical studies have shown that there are ancient ruins in the sea off the coast, which substantiates the Puranic accounts of there being a great city here previously, which fell into the sea or was covered by the sea. I think all these matajis then unke liye anuvad ho rahe hain. Hey, kine? Unke liye? Acha, all right. Lekin, all right. Acha, okay. So that's very nice. But we don't need that. We're not. Our understanding of Krishna and Dwaraka is not dependent on some survey by some society, by archaeology or oceanography or geology or anthropology or any such thing. We accept the Shastric statements, that's all. And if that backs it up, all well and good. But we shouldn't rely on that, because you know, scientists, they can say one thing one day and the next day they'll say something else. So that's if we can quote that for people who they have faith in all these ographies, for people like that we can quote that. But as far as we're concerned, our evidence is the Shastra. Just like this came up recently, the the Indian government, they wanted to destroy that. They wanted to make an ocean passageway between Sri Lanka and India, for which they'd have to destroy what's been known since time immemorial as Rama Setu. So then some statements are brought up from our eminent... Should I call them? No, I won't call them demoniac leaders. That actually there's no historical evidence that Ram ever existed, and all this kind. Just so they can make their... smash the Ram Setu and make their path for the ships and all this rascaldom. But Historical evidence? What historical evidence? What are you going to see with your eyes anyway? Looking at some rocks, and they look at some rocks and some bones, and they say, well, this 20,000 years ago this happened, 30,000 years ago. We found one bone here and another bone there, and that proves that man descended from monkeys, and all nonsense they talk. So we don't depend on their archaeological evidence. You see, they'll use it by their plans to... They'll use it to disprove. You see, we have proved by archaeology that no such person as Ram ever existed. And then you have to accept that? No. So we accept Shastra. Vyasadeva has written. We've come here to glorify Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva has established, he was here in the world at the same time as Krishna. He has established that Krishna is... was in Vrindavan, Mathura and Dwarka, and we accept that. That's all. And if anyone wants to give some archaeological evidence, all right, very good. But we're not waiting for that. We're not depending on that. Otherwise, if you want so-called scientific evidence, then... throw it out from the... There's no soul, because no one... What's the scientific evidence of the soul? Is there any microscope? Of course, there is, as good as the electron, because no one ever saw an electron, but it's recognized by its symptoms. So the soul also, no one ever saw an atma, but it's recognized by its symptoms. But of course these... so-called scientists, they won't accept that, because they have blind faith in electrons and blind lack of faith, or blind disbelief in anything that they don't want to believe in. That's not science. Therefore, we don't accept their science, their so-called science. We accept what Vyasadeva has given. He's the best scientist, or he's the representative of Krishna, who's the best scientist. They don't believe, these rascal scientists, they don't believe because they can't do it. They didn't. Krishna transferred the Mathura Vasis in their sleep to Dwarka. They can't do it, so they don't believe anyone else can do it. This is called rascaldom. Krishna expands himself into unlimited forms. They can't do it, so they don't believe anyone else can do it. Simply rascal, though. Simply rascals. Prabhupada, he used to say SR. In the early days of the movement, he would say SR. And the devotees asked, what would that mean, Prabhupada? Simply rascals. That's all. They'd mention the name of someone, Prabhupada would say, S.R. What does that mean? Simply rascal. So, we've come here to Dwarka. Now, some people say, well, it's not very good for Gaurya Vaishnavas to come to Dwarka because we should concentrate on Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't come here. He went from Puri down to the south, more or less on the eastern side, and then came up on the western side. And then at the Narmada, he turned east and went through what is now Madhya Pradesh, and then went through the Jharkhand and came to back to Puri. So some people say that because in Vrindavan there's a different mood to Dwarka, which is true. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was cultivating the Radha Bhava Dyuti Suvalitam Nomi Krishna Swarupam. We offer respects to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as he who is, or he is Krishna who has accepted the feelings and the bodily lust of Radha. So in Vrindavan, if they hear the word Dwarka, they don't feel too happy, because they think those people, they kidnapped our Krishna, or our Krishna, he's gone off there. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he didn't come to Dwarka. And Gauriyas, sometimes they say, some Gauriyas, or it's generally, you could say, generally accepted among Gauriyas, that we don't come to Dwarka. But Nityananda Prabhu came, so if he can come, we can come, isn't it? It can't be that bad. Nityananda Prabhu, that's described in his travels, and Krishna lived here. So it's not like going to a slaughterhouse or something like that. And you won't find any slaughterhouses here. Everyone here is a devotee of Krishna. And in the mood of Dwarka also, that very... we can find from the Shastra the descriptions of the Yadus, the Yadu dynasty, who were living there with Krishna. They're very relaxed and happy that Krishna is here, Krishna's looking after us, we have no problems, we're Krishna's people, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so everything is fine, no problems. So that's the mood of the people here up to the present time. They're relaxed. Krishna is looking after us. We have no problems. We don't find anyone in suffering from stress. We have building a factory, running off to the office. No such thing. Everyone's relaxed. Jai Dwarkadhish. Everyone is happy in the protection of Dwarkadhish. And actually he is protecting them. They don't have any problems. Even there are no severe weather disturbances or any such thing. The climate here, although it's a very cold winter in most of India, but it's not very cold here. Even though we looked in Bangalore just before I came here, we looked on the internet to see what's the weather in Dwarka, and we saw Dwarka 3 degrees fog. I said, that can't be right. I looked and said, Dwarka, Delhi. There's an area of Delhi called Dwarka. So in Delhi they're suffering. But then Dwarka, Gujarat is pleasant. And in the summer also, it's not intensely hot. Pleasant climate. And Krishna protects in all respects. There was this earthquake centered around Bhuj, and the effect went practically all over Gujarat. It was felt even as far away as, where were you? In Balavidyanagar? It was felt there. It was felt, I was in Baroda, I think. Little shaking there. Surat, he went. In Surat, it was heavy. So it was such a heavy, and Dwarka is quite close to here. But there was nothing. No buildings damaged, nothing. No stones, nothing fell. Now, in Big Dwarka, which is about 30 kilometers further along, then you have to go in the sea, they claim that that's the real place. But actually, the earthquake affected there. So, which is the real one? You can see, I don't know, I went there 4 years ago, you could still see all the stones collapse, no one bothered to. It wasn't so severe there either. And then again in, the last war between Pakistan and India. Pakistan attacked India 3 times. After that they gave up. Once in the 1940s, once in the 1950s, and once in the 1960s. Now they just do terrorism. The direct attack didn't work. I think it was 63 they had a war, so they attacked India. So they send a naval ship down here, and there was no protection. And they fired their missiles right on Dwarka. Because this is actually just opposite Karachi. It's very close to Karachi. So they send their missiles, and It was like a point blank shot, and they went all right over the town and landed in a field and didn't explode.
Yeah, so people are very relaxed. They're all devotees, and they appreciate very much when our ISKCON devotees come. And especially they appreciate if we do Harinam. So that's been going on. Devotees doing Harinam Sankirtan. We'll do that again. And those devotees are going to stay on some extra time after this festival is over. Do Harinam Sankirtan as much as possible. That's one kind of preaching also. You'll see that the Mangalati here is at 7 o'clock in the morning, so you might think, well, that's pretty late, but that's normal in the... Of course, this is not Dalab Sampradaya. This is under the priests here come under the Shankara Acharya Sampradaya, although they're officially Shankara Sampradaya, but they're all devoted. But it's very late, but that's you'll find in all the Dalab Sampradaya temples. They're not even temples, they don't call them mandirs, haveli, it's a house. But it's always late in the morning, because they think the idea is that, well, they worship Krishna as a young boy. So he should get enough rest. We shouldn't get him up too early in the morning. So let him rest peacefully. So you'll find that. And then during the day they have all kinds of, in the Dalab Sampradaya Havelis, they have all kinds of entertainments for Krishna, different toys, bring in different songs they sing for him, lots of food. So here in Dwarka, yeah, Harinam is good to perform, reading Krishna book about his Dwarka pastimes. Of course, the Dwarkadish temple is there. That's the main attraction. The river Gomti, sacred river, is there. Small river. The sea, where Krishna himself must have bathed in the sea, because the sea is the sea is always considered, at least the sea is around India is always considered sacred. On the eastern side the sea is called the Mahodadi, and here on the western side the sea is called Ratnaka, or the place of where the jewels come from. For seeing there's not much as compared to Vrindavan or Puri. Visually there's not much, so you can hear about Krishna's pastimes. Just in the town there's this there's also what's called the Nrigakup, which is supposed to be where Krishna pulled Nriga out of his well. Nriga means King Nriga, and Kup means well, Kua. Then a little distance is just close to that well is the arch, which ISKCON Padyatra, when it started here, first of all in 1986, started from Dwarka. Dwarika. Many in Hindi they say Dwarika, isn't it? In Bengali, Dwarka. So they started from here and they made a big entrance gate. And now the devotees are in Gujarat again. They're coming. They'll be here soon. I think there'll be four times they've been all around. They go all around India and come back again. So that'll be four times. So by the mercy of Dwarkadish, all the people of Dwarka got into that festival. So by the mercy of Dwarkadish, that Padyatra is still going on. Non-stop. They only stop in Kartik for attending the Vraj Mandap Parikrama. So it keeps on going round and round and keeps on coming back to Dwarka for the blessings of Dwarkadish. That's a great achievement. I mean, anyone who's run a temple knows that it's not easy. But what to speak of running a temple which is moving every day? And you have to set up every time, you have to, not at least every few days, they're moving. And every time you have to find a place to stay and set up all the equipment for a program and arrange for cooking and programs, and so it's a great achievement. By the mercy of Dwarkadish, they're going on for 24 years. So may it go on and on. And may there be more and more padyatras, and that comes back again and again to take the blessings of Dwarkadish. A little distance from here, well, just outside the town, it's a small town, it's the Rukmini Devi Temple. And then a little further on is the what is called the Gopi Talab, where it's said that the gopis from Vrindavan, they came here to Dwarka. And that's the place where the Gopi Chandan that I hope you're all wearing, those of you who are not, kindly do so. That all over the world, from that place, that Gopi Chandan goes. That's the natural yellow earth which is dug out of there. So that's important for Gauriyas, isn't it? Some Gauriyas have to come here to get the Gopi Chanda. When we came first, when was that? I can't remember which year. Can you remember? 96? We came at that time. We dug up ourselves several sacks full. And I think we're still using that. We dug it out of the ground ourselves. So like I say, all over the world, people from South America, all places, they're putting this Gopi Chandan on. So, yeah, these are places to see. If you want, you can go up on the lighthouse and take a view. I never did it myself, but I'm not saying you can do it. You can take a view of Dwarka. And then there's Big Dwarka, which is along the coast. I'm not saying it's bad. I went there twice. So you can visit there also. Just like here, there's a Gurukul. There's a Gurukul there for training the boys in mantras and puja and all this. And many of them, they stay here in Dwarka and just do their priestly duties. You'll see here You'll see so many of the local brahmanas and pandas, they're dressed in what seems to be an unusual style, in bright colors. That dress is made from the flags. The flags, five times a day they change the flags, and then that's made into these bagal bandis, these tie-up shirts, and then the dhotis. So that follows in the line of Uddhava, who was the greatest devotee of Krishna in Dwarka, who said, Tvayopabukta Sragandha Vasa, Vasa means cloth or dress, Vasa Lankara Charchita, Uchishta Bhojino Dasas Tavamaya Jayimahi. Uddhava said that by taking the food remnants of yourself, Krishna, by taking the garlands that are offered to you, by taking the chandan, the remnants of the chandan, sandalwood offered to you, Tvayopabhukta Sragandha, the clothing that's offered to you, by taking ornaments offered to you, we, your servants, can cross over Maya. So Uddhava, he had this rule. He wouldn't wear any clothes unless they're formally worn by Krishna. He would not wear any garlands, he wouldn't take any ornaments, only Krishna's remnants. So this is going on here, that the pujaris, maybe not all the time, but they dress in this clothes. So very distinctive clothing. You'll find men dressed in purple dhotis and green dhotis, and they change according to the day. The flags are different colors according to the seven colors for 7 days, according to the astrological magic. And so the devotees, they also wear, on a certain day they're supposed to wear a certain color. So like that, this culture is going on. This is a great place for pilgrimage. We'll find, not now so much, but during the summer, the school holidays, we'll find buses coming in with Tamil Nadu number plates, Bengal number plates. They come all the way here. That means they visit so many places on the way, and on the way back also. But they come such a long way. They feel it's very important to visit Dwarka. I know for Bengalis, they think it's a very important thing to visit Dwarka. It's such a long way. They like to come to Dwarka. And those who are coming by road, you saw some people walking. So there are many people who still now walk to Dwarka from a long distance. Some from villages in Gujarat, from Maharashtra, they'll come by walking. It may take them many, of course. It's not. I think most of you who came took at least one day to come. Some of you came from Poland, Czech Republic, so maybe you came quicker than the devotees who came from Tamil Nadu, because the flights are quicker than the trains. But if you came along the road, you'll see people are walking. Some they do that. They go from Pandharpur in Maharashtra to Dwarka by walking. So, and as they go along, they're chanting and singing, like they say. Except severe austerity, such as. Quite austere to walk such a long, but they do because they think they want to, they'd like to go this way. This is actually that's the traditional way to make a pilgrimage, is by walking. You're not supposed to, actually a proper pilgrimage, you're not supposed to go by any vehicle. In those days there were bullock carts, but only by walking. That's the proper way to do it. And the sannyasi, he's not supposed to use any vehicle. Only walking. So it takes a long time to go to any holy place. Prabhupada was asked about that you're a sannyasi, you're using vehicles. Prabhupada said, well, I have to preach, you see. Otherwise, if I have to go from one place to another, it'll take so many days. So the principle of preaching is higher, that we can go from one place to another quickly and then do our service of preaching. So anyway, the modern age is different. You wouldn't all be here if you had to walk. I wouldn't be either. Because modern life means work, 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 work. There's no time. Previously, to go on yatra meant you had to take out a long time, just like to walk from a village in Maharashtra to Dwarka. It's going to take more than a month. From Pandharpur to Dwarka, it's going to take more than a month. So, and then more than a month back. So people have to take out the time. Generally retired older people, Vanaprastha, they will do that. So it's not that everyone can do that. That's the modern facility, you can go to all these places. Now they have trains connecting the four dhams, isn't it? They have Rameshwaram to Oka, then Puri Oka, Haridwar for Badrinath to Oka. So in this way they're connecting. But there are still some people, they like to do it in the traditional way. And as they're going and chanting about Krishna, remembering Krishna, and cultivating the thought, we're going to see Krishna, we're going to come and present ourselves before Krishna. So you can imagine how they feel when they actually enter the temple after walking for more than a month. in the cold and the heat and the rain. So when you come by road, you can see from a few kilometers over the open plain, you can see the spire of the temple. So after walking for such a long distance, what a feeling they must have there. And then with every step, they're coming closer, closer, closer. Then they come here, bathe in the Gomti, and then take darshan. So that darshan, they'll be very, very blissful to have. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was going to Puri, then when he saw from a distance, from the Ataranala, the 18 arched bridge at the entrance to Puri, he saw the temple and he became completely ecstatic. And then when he entered the temple, he collapsed in ecstasy. So those who have time, they can do like that. But the main point in coming to a holy place, Krishna says, is not to bathe in the water, nor even to take darshan in the temple. Krishna says that anyone who thinks that that's the purpose of a pilgrimage is just like an animal. That's a strange thing, isn't it? What's that verse? Yasyatma buddhi kunape tridhatuke swadhi kalatradeshu bhoma ijadihi yatirta buddhi salilena kari jijaneshvavigneshu sa eva goka. Krishna says that anyone who thinks that this body, which is just made up of three basic elements and a bunch of horrible things, is themselves, anyone who thinks like that, anyone who thinks that janani janma bhumischa swargam eva gariyasi, a well-known saying, that my mother and my place of birth, my motherland, are more glorious than heaven. But Krishna says, anyone who thinks like that, anyone who thinks that the body is the self, anyone who thinks that the land of their birth is worshipable, and anyone who goes to a holy place just to take a bath. I went there, I took a bath, I took darshan, I came back. Anyone who thinks like that, Krishna says, is Gokara, which means cow, donkey. Which means, could mean no more intelligent than a cow or a donkey, or a donkey among cows, something like that. But anyway, it's a derogatory term. Krishna saying, this is not good. If you think that you're the body, then you're a fool. If you think that the land of your birth is worshipable, you're a fool. If you think that we'll go to a holy place, take a bath, and nowadays take a photo also, that's obligatory, and that's it. Such a person is a fool, Krishna says. Why is that? One should not simply go to a holy place to take a bath or to take darshan or to follow the rituals. There are rituals given in Shastra for going to a holy place. Each holy place has their rituals. First of all, you come to a place, you should fast, then shave your head if you're a man, or in South India if you're a woman also. They also do that sometimes. And there are so many rituals. You have to go here to this place, and then you have to say this mantra. The local panda or guide he chants the mantras for you, and the pandas will tell you in the local stala or tirtha purana, it said, you do this, do this, do this, and then you have to give dakshina to the pandas, and they know all the rules. You have to, you do all this and you think, I did everything perfectly. But Krishna, he says, well, if you do all that, That's the rituals, but you didn't properly understand the purpose of coming to a holy place. And Srila Prabhupada explains that the real purpose of coming to a holy place is to hear from the saintly people there. One should hear something for one's spiritual upliftment. That is the main point of coming. That in the holy places it's expected that holy people live there. And what do holy people do? Well, one of the things they do is study Shastra. And then they're supposed to enlighten people. They hear and they study. And then they enlighten people. This is the duty of a sadhu. So those who show people around the holy places, they're supposed to not just say, well, here, Krishna did this and did that, that's very good, but they should explain the significance of it also. Otherwise, the tendency is for people to just not take it very seriously. The significance is that Krishna, he comes to this world to demonstrate his pastimes, to show us that we belong to him. We don't belong to this world. He comes to attract us to join him in his eternal pastimes. So this should be explained. That we don't belong in the material world, we belong in the spiritual world. The implicit in this statement of Krishna's that people who are like animals, they simply come to a holy place without hearing from sadhus. Now this, what is the meaning of this? I mean, why should you call someone an animal? It's pious people go to holy places, isn't it? Why should they be so insulted? So implicit in this is the understanding that people come to holy places not to become holy, but to get facilities for pious sense gratification. That you go to a holy place and then all the sins that you did, you dump them in the holy place. You take a bath in the holy river and then you get free from all your sins. And then you give some dakshina to the priests and then they take your sinful reactions. And then you're free and you can go back and make some more sinful reactions to dump the next time you come to a holy place. Or you get blessings for improved material life. So it's pious in one sense, but in another sense it's animalistic, because animals, they cannot think beyond sense gratification. A human being can. An animal has no facility to think of anything but how to enjoy its senses. A human being has the facility to go beyond that. So if a human being doesn't think how to, if a human being doesn't see that sense gratification simply leads to suffering and bondage, yehi samsparshaja bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kondaya nateshu ramate buddha. If one doesn't see that sense gratification is simply a cause of suffering, which doesn't require actually Krishna to tell us in Bhagavad Gita, anyone should be able to see that. We see it all the time, all around us, but we don't see it. It takes someone of enlightened intelligence to see this and understand this. Even if we're told, we may not understand. People, we're told that material life is miserable. No, it's not miserable. I'm living very happily. Well, birth, death, old age and disease are miserable. I say, well, that's natural. It's natural, yes, and it's miserable. The people don't see, they can't see, because they're of animalistic mentality. So one may be pious, but pious for sense gratification, well, it's in Krishna's estimation, it's not a very exalted position, simply to be pious. One should come to a higher platform. Implicit in this statement is that those who come to holy places, they should hear from sadhus. They should hear, the sadhus should tell them about the purpose of life and about the miseries of material life and why we should go beyond birth and death. Krishna comes to tell us, Bhagavad Gita, that we should go beyond this world of birth and death. The sadhus should speak this. Even if the sadhus speak on Krishna's pastimes, well, by this statement, Yatirtha buddhi salile nakar hijit janeshva vigneshusva eva gokara, that people who come and just for the, they learn about the rituals and they take a bath and they have darshan, but they don't hear from sadhus. So, yeah, it's implicit in this statement that they should hear that material life is miserable, because they're coming with the idea of sense enjoyment. But if they don't hear from sadhus about the actual nature of this world, then they'll just continue in this materialistic mentality. And even utilizing the dharma of the Lord or the holy places connected with Him for furthering their sense gratification. It's ludicrous. Krishna comes to this world to teach us about the nature of the spiritual world, to point out to us how miserable is this material world. And people who have some faith in Krishna, but they think, oh, Krishna is very holy, Krishna is very pure, so I can use him. He can help me to enjoy more sense gratification. So it's a ludicrous mixture of faithfulness on one side, but a misplaced faith. So that we should hear, not simply about the... To hear from sadhus means not simply about the pastimes of Krishna, but the teachings of Krishna. Otherwise, if we just hear about the pastimes, then we will remain in the consciousness of sense gratification. If it's not pointed out to us that we need to become free from material attachment, then we see that people hear the pastimes of Krishna, but they take it as, because their consciousness is one of sense gratification, they take it, they have no conception, or no concept that there could be anything but sense gratification. And materialistic people, everything they do, directly or indirectly, is meant for sense gratification. And it's considered among materialistic people, which means almost everyone in the world, it's considered quite normal and acceptable to do things for sense gratification. I'm going to watch the TV. Why? Because I enjoy watching the program. I'm going to drink a chai or Pepsi Cola. Because it's nice. I like it. I get some pleasure. But for transcendentalists, this is completely taboo. You don't do anything for sense. A transcendentalist should not do anything. He doesn't do anything for sense gratification. Even things which would normally be thought enjoyable, he doesn't want to enjoy. Because his mentality is different. He knows that the consciousness of sense gratification binds us in this world. So that even among devotees, if someone is seen to be enjoying something, it's pointed out, hey, watch out, you're in Maya. That's wrong. When someone's enjoying themselves among materialistic people, other materialistic people, they'll either be envious or they'll be nice and they'll say, oh, you're having a great time, great, have a great time. In America, they say that, have a great day. Also on Jet Airways, they adopted this. It used to be have a good day, now it's have a great day. What great day? And no one has. Just like this, Prabhupada, he explained, what is the meaning of good morning? Good morning means nothing horrible happened yet. So, the consciousness of a devotee is quite different. But that consciousness comes from hearing about the nature of this world and of our duty toward Krishna, that we are supposed to serve Krishna, which means without any desire for personal sense gratification. There's no desire for personal enjoyment. We are sold out slaves to Krishna. We're cultivating that consciousness that everything I do is simply meant for Krishna's pleasure. For people who don't hear that, even though they may be devotees of Krishna at some level, but they'll take it that Krishna is an agent for their sense gratification. And so people come to holy places. This Dwarka, it's very popular for these Bhagavad Saptas, that professional speakers on Srimad Bhagavatam, they come here and many people come and they think it's more auspicious that we'll hear Bhagavad Sapta, we'll hear about Krishna, that's already auspicious. And if we hear about it in the place of Krishna's pastimes, it's even more auspicious. So they come and they hear their Bhagavad Sutra and they go home and they continue with their pious sense gratification. That they're feeling they're devotees of Krishna, but it'll never even arise in their mind that they shouldn't drink tea. And they think, well, what's wrong with drinking tea? It's an act of sense gratification. It's not a highly sinful activity like drinking alcohol. But there's no purpose by which Krishna can be served by doing that. It doesn't nourish the body for the service of Krishna. It's simply for actually a very minor sense gratification. But it's sense gratification nevertheless. There's no Krishna conscious purpose. But people, they don't even have a slight, it never comes to their mind that if I'm supposed to be a devotee of Krishna, I shouldn't do this. It doesn't come to their consciousness because they never had any such training. So this kind of instruction is needed. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he went to the at Radhakunda. He spoke. He gave a series of lectures. So he is intimate devotee or intimate associate of Radha, in Radha's following. And this is the most intimate place for worship of Radha and Krishna. So the Babaji's living there, they were expecting that he'll speak something about Radha Krishna Lila. He spoke on the Upanishads, which the Babaji's thought that was like a sacrilege. Sacrilege? You don't know that word? It means something like ninda or opastuti, something like that. You can look it up in the dictionary. It's an important word. So they thought it was completely inappropriate and against the whole spirit of Radha Kund. But Saraswati Thakur wanted to establish that you are attempting to worship Radha, but first we should know what is the basis before one can come to this highly exalted platform. One has to understand fully what one is doing, why one is doing it. It's not that you can just go and park your body and your take your mind full of materialistic concepts and take that to Radha Kunda, and then all of a sudden you become an intimate associate of Radharani. It doesn't work. We practically see it doesn't work. It's simply by talking about praying or simply by imitating that, it doesn't come. The first level is Sharanagati, surrendering to Krishna, which is based on the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Enjoyer. We are meant for His service. So certainly Krishna will look after His devotees, but yayatamam prapadyante tamastataiva pajami aham. It's not that one can simply declare, I am a devotee of Krishna, so now it's Krishna's duty to look after me. It doesn't work like that, we see. As Srila Prabhupada notes in one purport in Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes neophyte devotees ask, well, I'm a devotee, then why am I getting sick and why am I having problems? But they think that, well, now I put on tilak, so it's Krishna's duty to come and scratch my back when I have an itch. And Krishna, I'm feeling hot, come and fan me. Why am I uncomfortable? You should come and fan me. This mentality is a sinful mentality. It's not a devotional mentality, or it's a perverse mentality. We are meant for serving Krishna, and our attitude for serving Krishna will be seen how much, even in adverse circumstances. Not that, well, what was that? There was one film star in America, Woody Allen or something. Very famous, but I can't. Is there a film star called Woody Allen? No. So he said, I think I could believe in God if God would give me a sign. So people say they should. God should give me a sign, some indication of His existence, like putting $1 billion in my bank account. That was his joke. That was his sarcastic joke. Deposited by God. So people think that, yeah, God is made for our enjoyment. Everything is meant for my enjoyment. So if there's a God, He should also, if there is a God, they don't see Him everywhere, then He should facilitate my sense enjoyment. But rather, bhakti means that in the absence of sense enjoyment, rather in difficulty, a devotee will serve Krishna. They'll go on serving Krishna. That's actual bhakti. Not that first it will make everything comfortable. Just like some people say, well, first I'll get a few $1 million, then I'll adjust, I have to adjust this and adjust that, and then I'll do bhakti. Then I'll retire and go to Vrindavan. When everything's adjusted nicely materially, then I will retire and serve Krishna. But nothing, it will never adjust nicely, because the nature of the material world is such, it will never be nice. So the very idea that first of all I will make my material condition very nice and see that all my family members, everything's very nice, and then I'll serve Krishna. But this idea is based on ignorance, because the material situation is, it will never be nice, it will never be peaceful. So we should start immediately. We have to, before this life is over, we have to do whatever is required so that we don't get born again. So we can go to Krishna. So if we wait for an ideal situation, what is the ideal situation? Actually, the difficulty is an ideal situation. That is better, because we can better take shelter of Krishna. Just like people say, and they say, well, what if I join the temple? What will be my security? who will look after me in my old age? But then, well, if no one looks after you, better. Then you have no one to depend on but Krishna. So the thought that I have to see my securities looked after, everything will be nice, but this thought is actually anti-devotional. Because if there is no other shelter but Krishna, then that's perfect bhakti. So these things we should hear. Coming to the holy places, we should hear. So generally I'm organizing these Shravan Kirtan camps more and more. They may or may not be in holy places. Actually, in some ways it's better not to have them in holy places, because if they're in holy places, people go off to see this place and see that place, but it's better just to sit and hear. By hearing we'll be more benefited than seeing this and seeing that. Anyway, we've come here to this holy place, Dwaraka. We beg for the blessings of Dwarakadish, that we may hear very nicely. This festival is organized around the principle of Vyasa Puja. Vyasa Puja is best conducted by hearing the message of Vyasa. Isn't that the best way to worship Vyasa? Because Vyasa, he gave his function is to present knowledge for the uplift of mankind. So the best way we can worship Vyasa is to hear what he has presented through those who are supposed to be representing him. That is the best Vyasa Puja. So we'll do that. We'll hear. And of course, Vyasa's instruction for Kali Yoga is that we should chant the holy names of Krishna. Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gatiranyata. So hearing and chanting, these activities we should perform, having come to this holy place, or any place, we should hear and chant about Krishna. Shravana Kirtana Karo Anukara Vasata Pachala Chari Kahe Premananda Manusha Janava Shafala Karana Bhari. Shravana Kirtana, that should go on incessantly. And how is that possible? Give up all nonsense. Everything inauspicious, this gossiping, blah, 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 this, that, unnecessarily. The talking nonsense, it's just like farting through your mouth. So you let out bad air through your backside, and if we're talking nonsense, it's like letting bad air out through the front side. Unpleasant. But the person who's doing it thinks it's pleasant. The person who's farting, they think it smells very nice. And everyone else thinks it smells horrible. And those who are talking nonsense, they think, I'm talking so much interesting nonsense. But the devotee, he thinks this is horrible. Bad smell, bad sound. So we should hear and chant about Krishna. And that will be the success of our coming here. If we hear and chant about Krishna. And we can also go to all these different, there aren't so many places to go here. You can bathe in the sea, you can bathe in the Ganga. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he visited various places, he would bathe in the rivers. Of course, by his doing so, he purified those rivers. The rivers who have all personalities, they're very happy to receive Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so he reciprocated with his devotees by doing so. But he also set an example for other pilgrims coming in future that they should also bathe in these holy places and visit the temples, offer prayers to the deities. We should definitely do all these things. I'm not saying we should. We should do that. Those of you who, I suppose that's already planned, those who are going to do it, some of you may visit, having come this long distance, not too far from here is Somnath, which is famous as one of the Jyotirlingas, or important place for the worship of Lord Shiva. And close to that is Prabhas, which was a holy place even at the time of Krishna, because Krishna suggested going for a pravas to Prabhas, going for an outing to Prabhas. So that's the place where Krishna left this world. So devotees, they're not much happy about that pastime, but that's close to Somnath, which was such a wealthy temple that it was, I believe, 7 times it was destroyed by Muslim invaders. And again it was built up. So that shows that that's a temple of Lord Shiva, Somnath. So it shows the resilience of Vedic culture, that even though again and again they try to destroy, again and again it will come up. And so there's a lesson for us also, because again and again, as we're trying to go up in Krishna consciousness, we slip and fall, but again and again we should come up. Don't be discouraged. The Vedic culture is going on. That's called Sanatan Dharma. So the meaning of Sanatan Dharma is our eternal relationship with Krishna. But its outward manifestation is what is, or in the present day, the present, we could say, somewhat perverted manifestation is Hinduism. So that will go on. There will always be Hindus. Means that in every age, what is Sanatan Dharma? Means following the Vedic culture. The Vedas are eternal, and the Vedic usages, they're also eternal. This worshipping deities, fire sacrifices, respecting the brahmanas, protecting the cows, these are all aspects of Vedic culture which go on in the spiritual world and in the material world. These activities of Vedic culture go on. And even though in Kali Yuga it gets broken down, and then there are demons who try to destroy that, but it will go on and on and on and on. Because the Vedic culture is the bridge between the material world and the spiritual world. That is meant to lead us to the spiritual world. In the West, sometimes we hear about bridge preaching. How to make a bridge to help people come from material life to Krishna consciousness. But Krishna consciousness, or the broader Vedic culture, that in itself is the bridge between the material world and the spiritual world, between material consciousness and spiritual consciousness. So that will go on. The Dwarka, sometimes may be unmanifest, sometimes manifest. Krishna's Vrindavan, after he left this world, after some time, many of the holy places became lost, but then again Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his followers, they rediscovered them, and then again the worship in the various places was established. Worship of Krishna, sometimes it's manifest more strongly in the world, sometimes less so, but that culture will always go on. So that culture is being maintained here in Dwarka. It may not be in the same intensity with which Srila Prabhupada taught us to perform bhakti. Maybe not with the same intensity, but it's going on. I mean, if the temple wasn't here, if the priests weren't there, then we wouldn't be here either. So we should appreciate that the devotees here, they are maintaining the culture of Krishna consciousness. And by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we can add to that. Our Krishna conscious movement is meant for preaching Krishna consciousness to the non-devotees and to the devotees. People are already inclined to Krishna bhakti through their family tradition. They can also become inspired or educated to take it up in a more serious manner or a more intense manner by seeing the members of Srila Prabhupada's movement practicing very seriously. Then they become inspired to do so also, and they get to realize, they realize that actually this is better, we should be doing this. See, the people are coming, they're not from, they may not be from traditional background, but they're also wearing Vaishnav dress, they're also very strict in following. So a lot of our preaching, especially in these holy places, everywhere, but especially in these holy places, is to act ideally as Vaishnavas. If we ourselves are dressed as Vaishnavas, then the local people, they may also like to do. Because, you see, the general dress here of men is Western dress. The Brahmanas, not so, but others, they're just dressing Western dress. Still the women here are wearing traditional dress, but who knows? I mean, in Bombay and Pune and so many places, there may be so many young girls who they never wore a sari. Even they're married, they never wore a sari in their life. About a year ago I was in Bahrain, and some devotees there told me that a young girl had come there to do a job. A girl from Ray Bareilly, which is, you might think, a provincial town in Uttar Pradesh. She came there to do a job. You know, it's very strange how they could leave, you know, go by themselves to a foreign country to do a job. And anyway, she met the devotee, she became a devotee, and she got married. And on her wedding day, she wore a sari for the first time in her life. She didn't know how to put it on. From a provincial UP town. She didn't know. So we can see that this traditional culture is breaking down. So at least our devotees, part of our preaching is to, especially in India, is to show to demonstrate to the Indian people that this, your culture, is what you should be following. So if our devotees do that, then others will be inclined to follow. So on these yatras that I conduct, those who are assisting me, they arrange all this kindly. So one of the rules is everyone should be in proper Vaishnava dress. Even this pajamas, which is, you could say, semi-sadhu, like, no, wear a dhoti. If you don't know how to wear it, you shouldn't be here. But anyway, you can have someone show you. And then tilak, and then there's arrangements for prasadam for everyone. So please don't eat in restaurants, outside food. Just take the prasadam. That's a Vaishnav rule. That we only take that which is offered to Krishna. Cooked by devotees and offered to Krishna. So we should follow that rule at all times, and especially on these No, at all times. Which means we also follow it here. Not especially here, at all times. Which means also here. So please uphold this standard. If there are any special needs for diet or for children, then please contact Radhesh Prabhu, who's with his team is organizing everything. May not be able to organize at short notice, but please stick to this. And then our rising early in the morning, we'll be happy to see everyone here at 5 o'clock in the morning for Mangal Aarti. You can also visit the local ISKCON center if you want. Before that, at 4:30, they have Mangal Aarti there. That was established, our ISKCON center in Dwarka. And this is all right. I said what I was going to say for now. And there'll be prasadam now for everyone. And I need beads for those who are going to be initiated. I need to get the mala so I can chant on them. Otherwise I'll have so many to do at the last moment. So those who have beads to give, please give them to Vrindavan Chandra, who is sitting here. And then he can check that they're all in order, and then he'll give them to me to chant on. Any questions, please, about the subject matter that we've been discussing? Yeah, is there another mic?
Yeah, but not now.
You don't have it now. Okay, speak loudly, and I'll repeat the question.
Yes, Maharaj. We're talking about fires, the coming down.
Wait a minute. I couldn't hear it, so let's have it on the mic. I'll repeat the question again anyway for the sake of the recording and whoever might be watching it online. Probably someone.
As you were talking about punya karma, when we chant the prasadam prayers,
talking about punya karma and not talking very favorably about that.
Right.
I was talking about that. But we do speak about punya, and just like we say, the Mahaprasade Govinde Nama Brahmare Vaishnave Swapa Punyavatam Rajan Vishvaso Naiva Jayate. Persons of little punya or little pious activities, they do not place trust or faith in the Mahaprasad of Govinda, the holy name, Nama Brahmane. Sometimes devotees chant Namo Brahmane, but that's a complete mispronunciation. Nama Brahmane. They don't. People of little pious activities, they do not or faith in Mahaprasad, in Govinda, in the holy name, and in the Vaishnavas does not arise. So your question is, how does that fit? And we also find in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Yeshang Tantagatam Papam Jananam Punya Karmanam. Punya Karmanam Tidvandan Mohanir Mukta Bhajanti Mandrita Vrataha. Persons who have performed pious activities in this life and previous life, and who are free from the duality of delusion, Krishna says, they engage in my devotional service with a determined vow. This is a common question. This should go on the FAQ list. Punya, the term punya, which means pious activities. that has various contextual meanings. In various contexts, it's to be understood differently. Punya means that which gives rise to auspiciousness. So different people in different consciousness have different conceptions of what is auspicious. And therefore, there is bhoganmukhi punya, pious activities that are auspicious for those who think that enjoying this material world is auspicious. For those who have that goal. And that's what's generally called punya karma. There's also mokshanmukhi punya, pious activities that are favorable for getting released from this material world. And there's also bhaktionmukhi punya or sukriti. Actually, sukriti, or it means pious activities, and punya means the piety or auspicious result one gets from that. So this bhaktionmukhi sukriti means activities performed which give rise to bhakti. So it may be the same activity but performed in a different consciousness. Someone who comes to Dwaraka with the idea that let me get the blessings of Krishna for improving my material enjoyment, that's what they're going to get. Those who come to Dwaraka with the idea, this is one of the moksha puris. Puri is one of the four dhams and one of these seven places which give moksha, which I can't remember them all. There's Haridwar, Puri, Avantika, which means Ujjain, and Kanchi in south. Pushkar is one? Prayag? Anyway, there are seven. Sri Rangam? I don't think so. Not Sri Rangam. Anyway, there are. You can ask any pandit here, they all know. They'll tell you the shloka. So, Dwarka is also one of the moksha sthalas. But for those who want bhakti, they will come here for praying to Krishna. Please give me devotionals. Please give me the opportunity to serve you. So it may be the same activity, but performed for a different purpose. Now, coming to place like Dwaraka, one doesn't really come, Dwaraka, Vrindavan, Puri, one doesn't really come here unless one has the consciousness of serving Krishna, because the Krishna's dham is meant for serving him. So we're not really in the dham fully unless we're in the consciousness of serving him. But the advantage, this is, as I was saying, Krishna's Vedic culture is it's the bridge between the material world and the spiritual world. People want material enjoyment. They have faith in the Vedic injunctions, the Vedic utterances, that if you go to these places, you will get opportunity for material enjoyment. Then when they go there, by taking darshan of Krishna, even though their darshan is in a wrong consciousness, they're not really taking darshan, because really darshan means to present that Krishna, you're my Lord, I'm your servant, I present myself here for your service. But some attachment will be there for Krishna, and that will begin to develop. And then when one comes in contact with devotees, when that mundane punya can develop to by doing that develops more and more, and one actually, there is some preliminary purification. I discussed this so many times. It's an important subject. There's some, at least the one will not be killing cows. One, by following the Vedic injunctions, there's faith in the Vedas, there's some preliminary purification. One will not engage in grossly sinful activities. One will have the consciousness of serving others, even if the aim is that, well, by doing so I'll get some material benefit ultimately. But the following the path of karma kanda, there is some preliminary purification by which one becomes, if one is, not in every case, but one may be, if one by serving sadhus and by seeing their character, he becomes attracted to their bhakti to Krishna. Because the sadhu, materialistic people come here, sadhus come, devotees of Krishna come, so if we hear from the sadhus, serve the sadhus means devotees of Krishna, then our this mundane punya can be converted into actual spiritual punya by which we're inclined to serve Krishna. So when it's said that people with very little punya, they have faith in the holy names, well, punya that in this context specifically means that which is conducive to bhakti. Otherwise, to get the gift of bhakti, that janma koti sukritaya nalabhyate, by millions of births of ordinary mundane punya, that won't come. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavita mati kriyatam yadi katopi labhyate tatra lolyam api mulyam ekalam janma koti sukritayana labhyate. This Krishna bhakti rasa bhava, bhavana, the Krishna consciousness in short, the inclination for Krishna consciousness, if it's available anywhere, if we can get it, whatever, however, get it. Rupa Goswami recommends. But how to get it? What's the price? The price is intense eagerness. But that will, even if one performs in millions of lives materialistic pious activities, that will not in and of itself give rise to that, to bhakti. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. Bhakti comes from bhakti, and then bhakti is to Bhagavad bhakta. Sangena parijayati. Bhakti comes from association with devotees of Krishna. So that is required. Okay, pass over the mic.
Maharaj, taking darshan of Rukmani Bhakta Rishi in our temple and taking darshan of Bhakta Rishi in the big temple, is there any difference?
ये पूछ रहे हैं द्वारका ऋषि के मंदिर में दर्शन करना, इस्कॉन के मंदिर में दर्शन करने को फ्री है क्या?
Well, the very fact that you mentioned two places means there's a difference, isn't it? You couldn't have said this and that. It couldn't even be postulated that there is a difference if there wasn't a difference. Right? Is there a difference between Harichandra Das and Harichandra Das? It's a meaningless question. Is there any difference? Yes, there is a difference. And no, there is no difference because Krishna is Krishna, wherever he may be. But there is a difference also. In fact, the whole Mayavad attempt to prove that everything is one is ridiculous, because if it was, there wouldn't be any need to try to prove it. If everything was one, then there wouldn't be any need to try to prove it, right? You are one person. You are not two people. You don't have to write a book to establish that. You don't have to sit on a stage and say, I am one person. I am not two people. People think you're mad if you do that. So if you say, if you get on a stage and say, everything is one, it's mad. It's insane. And you try to prove it, but it goes against all that is observed, all that is conceivable. And then the only way it can be understood is as inconceivable. But if it's inconceivable, then anything which is fully inconceivable is non-existent. We have achintya bheda bhed tattva. Achintya, it means inconceivable to mundane thought. If it was totally inconceivable, then it would not exist. If it was inconceivable for everyone, then it simply doesn't exist. Hare Krishna, we'll finish there. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shri Dwaraka Dhama Ki Jai. Shri Dwaraka Dhish Bhagavan Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Beads, yes, I need beads. Please
be seated.
Those who are going to be initiated, they should give me beads for chanting.